If I do tape recorders, maybe we can get tape letters to one another. Well, my sister, she turned around and had her two kids, and they tried to take a tape. It was only half an hour tape on one side. Wasn't even a half an hour tape. They couldn't make it, but they giggled through the whole thing. They just couldn't do it. They couldn't get the sentence off, you know, what Colin says. So that was a farce. I mean, and then at that time, you know, these tape recorders weren't getting, you weren't getting them for $20, $30. So they were pretty expensive. Yeah, so it didn't work with my gang, but huh? I'm not sure that I guess that's because I traveled around maybe more or something like that there. You know, but
as you're talking, I have to make sure that I got this stop copying. It's a long time since I've done this. Say something.
Oh. But I even got fooled. I had one down in the mountains that I got a special thing to speak into, you know, a regular speaker. So we were talking, and I had the tape recorder, and we had several people conversing in this big room, like some over there and some over here. So I turned around and I shut it off, but I pushed the wrong lever. Then the next time I wanted to play a recording, well, here's just your, all this conversation. You were just coming, and I was across the room. I was the furthest from the thing, and my voice come on the strongest. See, everybody was in whisper. There was a couple of ladies there, and they were talking about, you know, their curtains or whatever the girls talk about. And the boys were talking politics and about the park. And so I laughed the next time they come over. It was on mail day. They used to gather at my house. And I said, well, a few people don't know, but I pulled a Nixon on you. I says, I got you in a speech, you know, which was unconsciously. And then it went till it closed. I mean, after the tape expanded, it was, well, a 90-minute tape or something. Maybe I had it. 45 minutes when I thought that I shut it off, and I didn't shut it off, but it just...
Well, tell me when you first came to Alaska, and what brought you up here?
Well, I guess, like every young man that hunts and fishes, why, you want to get in a place where there was some kind of game. I'm originally from Pennsylvania, so by being in Pennsylvania, every time I went out on a fishing excursion or a hunting trip, all it seemed was these here signs: no trespassing, no flower picking, no berry gathering, no. That just was pounding in my ears. Mm-hmm. What's this? No. All the wealthy people, they had bought the streams. They even put, because in Pennsylvania you can't stop a stream.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a stream and somebody got good fishing. You can go down there in a canoe or something. You can fish, or they have ducks. Like when I remember one business, they had a whole bunch of ducks and they were on this lake. Well, the bridge belonged to the state, see? So you could get right off the bridge in the whatever the right way and put a canoe in there. And some guys went in there one time and they shot all these here ducks by this here business place that they had this here pond, and they were feeding these ducks and they were kind of keeping. But they were wild ducks, so I figured, hey, boy, look at there. And they went in there and shot them. So anyway, with that in mind, I always thought, well, I'm going to go to a place where they don't have no. And so I came up here the first time in 1940. I made an excursion up here. I actually waited in Seattle, and then I hired out to a coal mine, because I was a coal miner to begin with.
Is that Effie Clumsy?
No, it was actually F. No, not F. Anyway, Oscar Anderson and Lusak from the Lusak Library in Anchorage. He was part owner, and then there was a woman. There was three of them, and the Evan Jones Coal Company. That's what it was, in a place called Jonesville, just north of Palmer. So I worked there one summer, and actually I worked on one job, and then a doctor had another mine called the Buffalo there, and I went and worked for this doctor, so I spent the summer there. Then already war was in very imminent because the camp was building extra buildings and everything. They were warned by the government, and the road was getting pushed into Alaska. You could hear from when I was got there finally, you could hear the men working on this here segment of the road that they're trying to unite it with the United States. They had different places, you know, but this was coming into Anchorage, so it was right around Palmer when I heard that business. So I come up here. Well, then after a while, of course, I had as a married man, I had a wife and a child back east. There was no room or anything. Geez, when we came up, I could come up from Seattle and they brought us into Anchorage. Why, they couldn't even find a room for us. So they had to send a speeder. This is something on the railroad. It was just an automobile that could run on a railroad track. So they sent one of their speeders out to take us up into the mines because they didn't have a room for us in town. Remember, of course, I was eager to see town. Not having any money, there was nothing, and everything was sky high. You know, the prices were, of course, it's sky higher now, but at that time, whiskey was 50 cents, beer was 50 cents, whiskey was a dollar. They didn't even have no pennies in Alaska at that time. If you got a 3-cent stamp, that's what it cost to mail a letter. You'd have to get a 2-cent one if you handed the girl a nickel in a post office because you didn't have no pennies for change, you know. So, yeah, well, I came up and I worked in a mine, and then, like I said, this war was imminent and everything else. In 94, they were talking about it already. You know, I mean, the war was over there, started, but we weren't involved with it, but I guess the coal companies were advised, so they put new buildings up and everything else while I was there. So I went back down in the States and back east, and of course I got involved myself in that thing after. I ended up in New Guinea and whatnot, so I didn't get back here till 1951 when I got it settled. Had put a couple pennies away so you could make a trip up here. Why, then I came up here, and I've been here ever since, in 1951. Well, at that time, too, I had a friend here from Pennsylvania that I had sent up again. There was a young man that used to be a bartender of mine back home. And I talked to him, and he turned around and came up here, and he'd done all right. Actually, he was an old sailor, and he knew engines, and he ended up down in Eielson in the Air Force base down there. So then I had come from Pennsylvania and brought him a parcel up. Well, in the meantime, he gets his brother, which is, and their name was Fisher. In fact, it's their young brother, Bob Fisher. He died, he saved people from Ice Island. He had one of the highest honorable things that you get from the government, like, you know, for doing some odd things. Ice Island was breaking up, and he went in there and rescued. And actually, I think that's the way he died later on. But he was married to one of them right in, natives right in on the island. Mm-hmm. And Jerry, too, that worked out here, passed away since. So that was
sort of when you came near around Fairbanks, you came up and worked?
Yeah, I came up to deliver to them, and then I actually read more about Homer, so I went down to Homer, and of course we were getting broke at that time. We didn't have the whole world of money. I think I had 300, my buddy had 350, and we had this here station wagon that he just bought. He saved all these bonds that he was saving during the war. He turned around and must have spent a half a day cashing these $25. I remember it. Waiting and waiting around that bank, and he was signing his name. This one was 17 and a half, that one was 18 and a quarter, 19, some were $21, you know, different how old the bonds were, not so much you could change. So we got the station wagon and we came up. But when we came up, we came for the stay. Like, I brought saws and skis and snowshoes and food to camp on the road and everything else. So this buddy and I, Charlie Klapaski, we traveled all the way up that time by the car. Well, this time the roads were open, you see. Yeah, so, well, when we went to Homer, actually, and there was no work around there. It seemed like everybody was homesteading, and I even was invited to a lot of homes, and it was surprising the people were from Chicago and New York, and they just loved it out. They just loved getting away, just like I loved getting away.
You didn't have any desire to homestead then?
Well, I did, but there was no money. Mm-hmm. I mean, the homestead, you had to have something to clear the land and everything mm-hmm. else. So mm-hmm. I was just, actually, that's what I came for, the homesteading. And there was homesteads open. I had friends after a while when I worked that had homesteads next to them, and you could have took them somewhere in a complete 160 acres, but it might be 120 or 80 acres right along that. There was only one dirt road in there, and I think there was about 15 cars, and maybe five of them was in good shape to mm-hmm. travel that road. Mm-hmm. So we were down in there, and then of course we had to get out of there because we didn't have no money, so we ended up in Kenai looking for work down there, and that was the first work we could get. I think we hit here April 15th, 1951, and the ice broke on the Chena that time, that day mm-hmm. that we came into town. Then we went down there, and we got into Cannery, and then, August, I guess the canning season was over anyway, and we stayed there for a couple of weeks. We smoked a bunch of salmon and everything else. Then we start coming up, and we're coming up on a highway in Glen Allen where we run into a line crew, and it was at Sheep Mountain. We were at Sheep Mountain where there was big snow came down. In fact, I turned around and I went in the place and says, we got paid off. We worked 3 months, so we had over $1,000 a piece, which is big money at that time. So we in this lodge, and the roof in the bar was, they had a new bar, like an extension from the old hotel. And the roof was sagging, and we were laughing because we were miners, so we put a timber up there in the middle of this bar to hold the roof up. That's how much it snowed. I was with my buddy coming up, and I said, they rounded a corner kind of fast, and there was a car coming. I said, did you see the snow on that there thing? And he said, September the 14th. I remember that day real good. And he says, Tony, geez, you've been drinking too much. He said, that wasn't snow, that's white tarpaulin on the guy's car. I said, well, we'll watch for the next one coming and see. Well, we didn't see no cars for a long time, and we were climbing the mountains there, and by golly, when we run into the snowflakes were as big as silver dollars. Well, pretty soon after going, and there was a big avalanche in one place to come down, we couldn't tell where we were. We thought it was going to come right
over
the
road. Where were you now coming up?
We're coming up from Palmer, from the Alpine. That's where I worked in the coal mines mm-hmm. before. In that area, starting to climb the mountains.
Coming up here?
Coming up to, coming back to Fairbanks, because we thought, well, this fishing season, what else could we do? We were miners, so we were going to come up here and try to get jobs in Healy. Then I had these friends in the house, and so, they might steer you around somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to know somebody when mm-hmm. you come to the place. So. Anyway, that's what we got caught in this year. Well, we made it into one place, and we didn't like that place, then we made it into the Sheep Mountain Lodge. And we went in there, I said, you got rooms, yeah, you got booze, yeah, you got food, yeah. I said, well, what the hell are we going to celebrate? So we stayed in there, and then here's a whole bunch of men hanging around in the bar, and I said to my buddy, because we had about 200-300 salmon that was smoked, so I said, go get couple of them fish, and we sliced them up and put them on the bar for people to enjoy them. And then pretty soon we got friendly that way. People love them salmon, especially them from the interior that never had it before. And this was smoked too, so it was really delicious. And while we were doing that, I got acquainted with all this here line crew. They couldn't work that day. It snowed so much.
Mm-hmm.
All
mm-hmm.
the equipment was blocked. They asked us what we do, and we told them, and said, well, we didn't know nothing about electricity. Well, they got jobs, you know how to work. I said, well, hell, if you're a miner, you know how to work, picking a shovel and a digging bar and everything else. He said, well, that's what most of this is all about. He said, digging holes out here. As you can see, there's no roads down there, and that's where the telephone line's going to go. And you know how to drill.
What year was that?
1951. That was 1951.
Just putting a telephone line in.
Yeah, and then they recommended, so we took it with a little grain of salt, and then the next day we... and these two women come in there with a little chihuahua. I had a laugh because this woman says she's from Xavier Cugat's Kennels, this little chihuahua. And I says, by golly, she put it in her coat pocket. And they got stuck. They couldn't make it to the lodge. They had to walk in the last couple miles because they hung up. So they come in with this chihuahua, and they left the dog down on the floor. You know, she had it in her coat. It was just a teeny thing. I don't think it weighed 2 pounds or if you weighed that much. But the chihuahua come over by me, and pretty soon it was in my lap, and I was feeding it the salmon. She said, you mean to tell me my dog is eating from you? She said, he won't eat from my husband or nobody but me. I said, well, nobody gave him smoked salmon, I guess, because by golly, he's eating right now. And of course, that cold weather, and I guess he had it in there open. So anyway, after we talked there, we were friendly, and they said, could you spare a some of this fish down by it? Well, I had the, I was one of these persons that I wouldn't sell nothing, but I got these here by myself and everything else and smoked them. So I says, okay, I'll give you, like the fish weighed about, oh, 5-6 pounds, I guess, so half. We had them cut, actually we cut them down the backbone and then smoked them so their bellies were still together. Oh, yeah. So we split it down the belly so they had a half a piece for their husband. And then we found out the next day we could get to Glen Allen because we were eager to get up the highway. We didn't want to stay there forever. Well, in Glen Allen, it snowed some more there, and then we were stuck. We had to stay there for 4 days. So there was a these same girls come by next day, and they were going to work in this Glen Allen Lodge. Because that's where we had this, they had the camp after a while, I got into it. And they said, oh boy, our husbands loved them salmon, and they thanked us and everything else, and then they were going to work at the lodge, and we were going to stay there. And they said, we ain't going to go no place, because it snowed so much, that all the roads were closed, from the States, from Fairbanks, from Valdez, from Anchorage, nothing was moving. In fact, their rating gear and everything was, oh, it was a big snowfall, you know, 2.5 feet, I guess. Well, anyway, we stayed in there, and the owner says, you know, I've been in here, he was a Canadian, he said, I've been in here for several years, and by golly, my wife and I never had a vacation, so we got these girls going to work for us now. My wife and I, we're going to take a vacation. So he had cabins, he had 4 or 5 cabins right around his business place there, so they went to cabin, they went on a vacation. And we sat around there and shot pool, and in fact, we had a dinner all together. They said, well, hell, you guys are here, and we're going to take our second honeymoon, and these girls are, we've got to get introduced to the place, how to do the business. So we had all family style, no costs or anything, and we know that makes for pretty nice. Well, we stayed there a couple of days, and then the husbands managed to get through, and then they start getting the plows going and start opening up places, and they said they worked on a wire stringing crew. They didn't need no men, but they had 2 different other kind of crews on this electrical work. If we were interested, why, oh yeah, anything that made money, why, that was for us. So, and then the weather got nice, and the snow's kind of, the highways were trimmed. We had snow all right, but God, we had beautiful weather after that. So that was September 14th, and we worked like that, and in different camps, because this year they had like 3 different crews 60 miles apart. And they had these here crews 60 miles apart, while we were on the first crew that would dig the holes and slap the pole in and then frame all the cross arms, these things that go up on the top with all the glass. Well, we framed them things on the ground, and then the next crew come and set the pole straight and tap them, and then the third crew comes through with the wire. So, but we were like 60 miles apart, so and that's why them girls were in this lodge. That's where their husbands, they were trying to follow where their husbands. Well, as these camps moved up, these people in the lodges needed help because there was like 50, 60 guys in each camp. And they were all boozers. That was the only thing you could do with them days was drink, you know. And we were actually, after a while, we were sleeping in tents and everything near these here lodges. And it was 30, 40, 50 below that we worked in. And finally, around Christmas time, they said they weren't going to work anymore if it was 50 below or colder. And it was that much in Tok, so that's when I quit, and then I left and went back to the States, where my buddy stayed on. And I went down there because I had family problems. And once I squared away with that, next spring I come up again. So my buddy was working right on through. He worked always through. He came over to Dot Lake, I guess, from Big Delta. They had a sort of a branch. They were bringing that telephone, I guess, trying to connect the Isle of Alaska with this military and everything else. So. Yeah, so that's how I got here. But when I was on the side there, the road, working from Glen Allen up, I was looking at these Wrangell Mountains there. Every day we traveled approximately a mile. That would that would mean, if the spans were 200 or 300 yards long, you know, and that's so many poles you put. So you travel about a mile a day. So every day you seen, and then it was getting darker every day, like it's getting lighter now. It was getting darker that day. And you had lots of northern lights and everything. Oh, geez, it was pretty. You were working by car lights and, you know, spotlights and everything else, and fires. We'd have to run from one pole to another with a fire to get all our material was laid down on the ground, and then it snowed over it, so you had to fish this stuff out and thaw it out to put it together. But we managed that. And so, like I said, it was until Christmas where I worked, and then I didn't come back till next week. Well, by that time we were already had, because you had a period when you worked with the unions that couldn't get in. You was just working temporary, like on probation, supposedly. Well, we got our time in, and we waited till everybody got hired out that summer. It was actually July, I guess. That's how late it was before we got hired. And then we got hired, and we went down to Caltag. We shipped this native community down in Caltag. How long is your take?
Oh, it'll be. Don't worry, it'll be fun.
I mean, you know, for time factor, you'll be talking and the thing ain't recording.
Oh, yeah, no, it'll be good. Beep, 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 beep when you get to the studio.
Yeah, so we went down to Caltag, and then we worked down there till the fall of the year and come back and got another job around town. And then by that time, we were admitted into the union as regular members. So then I've been here from that
what
time.
What union was that you've been working
with? 1951.
And what union was that?
Oh, at IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
So you stayed in and around here working as a lineman? And then
yeah, well, I worked out of here, and actually we had a contract where we worked for one company here that had a reciprocal contract. In other words, they'd have to hire some of our boys down in Anchorage, and when they put a lot of cable splicing work up here, I got with the cable splicer. Well, then they had their men come up here, so we kind of, so I got down into Anchorage, and I worked always out on the Aleutian chain.
Oh, yeah.
And from over here, why, then I worked in, I worked in Barter Island and some of the sites out of Barter for this Dew Line. And the first job we had, that was a White Alice thing down the river. That was for communications. And so, yeah, so I got St. Lawrence Island and Nome and you name it. I mean, I've been there in any place up and down the river where they had airstrips or anything like that there. That's
well, that's been pretty exciting in those days.
It was because it was taking me around to different parts of Alaska where if you came as a tourist, you'd have to be paying money. Here I was getting paid to go to these here places, and some of them were quite remote and everything else. So, and then you got room and board, and then until the time when then my buddy after, I think he went back east and he had a hometown girl. He brought her up here and they got married, so they got a home. And I bought a trailer, a portable thing, because I didn't know about it working. So I park it in their yard. And and then we, of course, in them days, we didn't work in the winter. They didn't have equipment that could bore down through the ground at that time. So we'd work about to October, November sometime, if you were lucky. And then you was off until about like now, May, April, whenever the snows receded and everything else. So yes, we was kind of a part-time feast or famine thing, you know. We'd make it. Well, after, I think, the first winter I spent, we sit there and we went to Fox hunting rabbits. Oh, God almighty, I must have shot so much rabbits. Everybody that come over said they was hungry, because there was lots of us in the same boat. We were just on unemployment, which was, I think, $25 a week at that time. So we'd go out and shoot these here rabbits, and I'd have 50, 60 rabbits around the trailer just hanging there. I'd say, if you're hungry, here, take a rabbit home. Then somebody would look in the frying pan. We had a big skillet, you know, in the 14 inches or something. And they'd look in there, what do you got, Tony? I said, same thing we had yesterday and the same thing we're going to have tomorrow, rabbits. In fact, I ate so many rabbits that year, I thought I was going to hop around like a rabbit. But yeah, we managed to get through that year, and then the next year when we worked in the summer, while it was putting away to, to make it again for the winter, because, in fact, I bought myself a pair of snowshoes then, and a pair of skis, and something to fool around, and, you know, so I could, well, the first couple of years I lived right downtown here. I lived on First Avenue. And Francie Doyle, she was in a place that had an old spaghetti house here.
Francie Doyle.
Yeah, and it was next to the Pioneer shop, and that was the first store that was built on the river here, so that was next door. Hulda Ford was the one that was the owner of that, and she was a spinster that crawled around town here. You could see her, and she owned the whole Second Avenue, I guess. In fact, the first time I seen her, I said, that poor old lady, she looked so nice and everything. I could see she was aged. I'm going to take her in and buy her a cup of coffee and a piece of pie or something like that there. And then after a while, I got to talking with somebody. I didn't, but when I got to talking to somebody, and they laughed, that lady there, she owns the whole Second Avenue. So she was quite the card, that Francie, or not Francie Doyle, but Hulda Ford. Francie Doyle was quite a card too. She was here in the old days when they had a line, and she worked on a line. And she had this here place down there with five rooms in it, and that's where I stayed for the first couple of years until my buddy bought a home. When he got married, then he bought a home, and then I got a trailer and we put it on. So
how did you when did you first get down in McCarthy? How did you manage?
Well, when I seen all this here, during the time I was working along that road, I said, boy, if this is such a pretty sight from the Wrangell Mountains, from the northern part, I wonder what it's like in the southern part. So one time I was working with a guy from Anchorage, and he was a splicer, and he had a friend that was operating the lodge down there at that time. I had this here friend that I was working with as a splicer that had a friend in McCarthy. So I think it was on the 4th of July, I was really married. I remarried up here. I met the English woman. And we got married, and then I bought a place on Farmer's Loop. So we went down there to see this here McCarthy. Knowing, so we had to go to Chitna, and that was the only way you could get in there is fly in. So I flew in there, and they had like 25 young men there that was working. They called themselves miners, but being an old miner that had 14 years underground, I just swooped, because they were working on the surface, you know. They were just handling rocks and bagging that ore down there. Well, we had quite a bit of fun, and it was a beautiful day, and I said, well, by golly, and that was so far away from everything. Even Fairbanks was far away from civilization, and then I can remember right here where we're sitting when they put the first red light here under the post office, and then nobody paid any attention because they didn't know what it was for. they would just wave, and you know, everybody would stop at the corner, nobody's coming. You know, we didn't have one-way streets like we have now. Yeah, so, and then there was only one bridge. I worked even for Gross Close. That was one with the line truck, and we had a wheel on a side which used to wrap up wire and everything with. And when we had that on, we'd have to stop the traffic on that bridge. We'd have to send men over, stop traffic, so that one truck would take the width of the two lanes. It was only a two lane, so cars could pass each other, but our truck and the car couldn't make it. So and since then, as you can see, we had bridges up and down.
What do you think statehood did for Alaska? What did you feel about that when that happened?
Well, I like statehood, yes, because that gave us representation and it gave us voice. And now I don't know if I've done the right thing or not, because this voice is something else. I'm not, everybody, for example, now everybody wants to build this country. Everybody's running away from their congested cities in the States and they're coming up to Alaska to get away from it. And then the first thing they do here is trying to organize the same thing that they left down there. Mm-hmm. You know, there is some denial here, but in the same time, we lose something, so you gain something. That's the game no matter where you go. If you gain conveniences, you get, you know, I mean, you go into big cities and the fire sirens are ringing all the time, and man, that'll demoralize you, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing up here. I liked when I came up here, why, the population was growing, you know, roughly 4 or 5% a year. Alaska was moving on, well, that was fine, but when it turned around, like when we had a pipeline here, when it traveled, and then the schools, they didn't. I even had my own grandchildren come up at that time, and they cried because they weren't putting them in the best. I said, hey, they didn't know you were coming, and neither did I. You just came at this year particular time, and I don't know as we should have to jump out of our britches, but give us a little time and we'll find classrooms for you. We'll double you up or have two classes a day. That's what this Alaska is all about. So now they're trying to find out enough for hotels. And I think, well, we are to a point now. Well, at one time we said that as Alaskans we didn't have no representation. Now I think we're going to get a little bit too much representation. So I'd like to hold the line myself at this part. And a lot of people feel that they came up here not to turn around and have the same things they had below. They want this outdoors and where you can jump in a car and drive 10, 15 miles and be in the woods and pick mushrooms, or because pretty soon, in fact, already you can see signs out here just like I left Pennsylvania. And no shooting, well, that's to just let you know that there's children around or something, you know, or private property. But pretty soon they'll tell you that you can't pick the berries and you can't pick the mushrooms the same way, not like down there, so.
Well, what were some of the bigger, did you have certain things, what would you say were strong influences in your life to make you think the way you did? Or,
well, I particularly, in fact, that's what brought me to Alaska. Actually, was Robert Service.
Oh.
Robert Service was, you know, he wrote all his poetry, so I had that in Pennsylvania, and of course that was a dreamer thing between the hunting and the fishing and the wildlife, and the way he explained people and how they live. It was a rugged life, and I liked the rugged life, and that's why I came. So, yeah, I would say Robert Service was the biggest influence to my coming to Alaska, and then other things stimulated, because you pick up every little record, just like now, everything the people know down below. There's people here, and they say, oh, us Alaskans, we get so much money. Well, don't you think that some people never got that kind of money in their life from anybody? I mean, from their own kin, even. And here, everybody gets a part of the... And these old-timers, like myself, well, you had to be here 25 years to get this $250, and then they contested that. Okay, now everybody that's 65 and has lived here a year gets the same thing. Well, then that's going to freeze the program out. There's going to be so many people coming here that lived down in the States, and then they just come up here when they're 65 and live for a year, and then they're collecting this 250.
Did you lived in, when you, getting back to McCarthy, when you lived there in the winter, so did you live there sometimes alone for long periods of time? Just.
Oh, I spent one winter there, and then of course I had the two homes, so I had good friends that stayed here. And at that time I had people stay. Let's see, I think, yes, I spent the whole winter down. I went down there and spent 9 months, but I had people that by the time I come back home, they'd done more damage, and I got rental out of the place.
I can believe that. When you look back over your life, what are some of the real highlights that you think of?
My highlights were always just to be alone in the mountains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was a loner, so I loved to get out in the hills and look over this vastness. And boy, you could even go right now. You can take in a car and drive up here to Cleary, and you get a thunder, weather like we're going to have shortly.
Mm-hmm.
Big clouds in the air and everything else. You can go over there and you can watch four or five storms and different. That's as far as your eyes can see, depending on your vision. You can see all these things. And then, like I say, you can tramp through the woods and you can hunt. At that time, the hunting was. Yeah, so I would say hunting was the thing I liked to live. Then, of course, I moved out to Farmer's Loop, so I had a little garden. And I think I was as much fascinating with that as that, just to see things grow bigger than I ever seen before, better than I ever seen before. You could actually sit there and watch the cabbages grow. So between my work and my garden and everything else, it was outdoors and fresh air. And of course, when I worked my 14 years in the coal mines in Pennsylvania, I had picked up if you called it asthma, now it's black lung. So this here fresh air and everything is just good for me. I think today I'm here, let's see, this is 1951, 1985, 34 years. I think I'm healthier today. Actually, I bet you I could show you tapes that I had where I was talking into them and I was wheezing right through the whole thing. I don't know if I'm doing that right now or not. But I mean, every time I'd pause a little bit, I'd go out of breath. You could hear that whistle in my throat. And
that was from working in the lungs.
And by working outdoors, and of course my work was outdoors, electrical, but outdoors, on the pole lines and the ditches. Like now they have modern things that they bury underground and everything, so you don't see so many poles to over homes. There's no obstacles for winds to blow trees down and knock them out, so a lot of places they're putting the whole areas in that are all underground cables. So that's what it was. Poles, and actually even like Healy, when they brought the power line from Healy, see, that one time they used to bring all the fuel here into Fairbanks, and now they got the mine mouth down there, so they turn around and generate the electricity down there in the big power plant, and they send it. Well, that line, that was metallic, big towers. So I worked on that line that came always from Healy to Fairbanks. And actually, them towers, there were some of them over 100 feet tall and everything. Yeah, well, you see them all along the road as you go down.
Yeah.
And we even had the places where we only could get in with helicopters. You couldn't even get in the summertime with cars. And then we had tundra buggies, and we had, what we didn't have, we were always looking for something novelty to go across the countryside and everything to get these things.
But
so in the same way, it's just like the pipeline came here too, but these things, after a while, they get to be eyesores. They're rubbing out this Alaska as we knew it. I used to go down through Paxton area, down to McCarthy, and there was such a pretty scenery all the time, boy. Just you and God. In fact, when you say all that highway, I could go on that highway sometime and never meet two or three people and drive 200 miles. Man, did I feel like the wealthiest bastard in New York, and didn't have to have no limousine, because that wasn't the thing. The thing is to travel and see all these things, and I've seen birds along the roads and hawks and eagles and all these things. So that was Alaska as I liked it.
You were saying,
and I still do, and of course I know that these things will have to come about. I mean, I know we're going to grow. But I am against spending, in fact, if I had my way about it, they wouldn't spend a penny on advertising this Alaska. It's advertised by mouth to mouth, you know, mm-hmm. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, so we don't need no better resuscitation than we're getting right now. That's this people are there. That's only for the businesses, well, hotels and things mm-hmm. like that. There. But that's what they're going to do. They're selling everybody with the thought that it's Alaska and this vastness and this great land and everything, and at the same time they're trying to popularize it. Yeah, we cut all our timber and we're losing money on it. We're catching all the fish and we're losing money. Everything we seem to be losing money on and don't bring no profits and everything else. So, yeah, I'd say, in fact, I think some of the cities down in the States, I think there was some place in California where one of the cities put a bypass so all these touristies would go right past their town. They didn't care about having them in, so I'm the same way here. If they come, all right, but I don't think we should spend millions of dollars to vacuum them up here and then sell them on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you know, that would be a prisoner. If they come on their own volition, that's fine. If you have to turn around and spend money to entice them up here, the heck with them.
So it's very different, Alaska, now than when you came here. And you
much so. I mean, there's lots of places that are still, mm-hmm. you know, pretty remote and everything. Did you have to go, like, I guess, in southeastern by boat and everything? But they're all, you know, they're developing these boat trips and everything uh-huh. else. And
do you think the people are more
bus
or less
trips?
Uh-huh. Do you think the people are more or less the same, or the philosophy is the same, or how does it?
Well, it's actually changed because you never had as much stealing as now, and if everybody had their doors. And when I went into Homer in 51, I met the guy there, and he said he'd worked in Fairbanks the year before. He was a carpenter, so he was working here. There was Eielson and everything, so when they short the carpenters, why, they send them up here. So I'm trying to buy land down there, and he's up here working to pay for his thing. But he turned around, he says, if you ever buy this way, stop in. He says, the door is open. So, you know, you just, well, today, boy, don't leave for a weekend and, mm-hmm. or leave two or three papers out there, somebody recognize, they'll walk away with your house or the fixtures in it. They've stolen whole houses here already, and all in, mm-hmm. you know, I just heard down in Big Delta where somebody stole the bathroom and the windows and the pipe and everything else out of it. So,
well, what was that?
So that's a different breed of cat now than when it was when we were here. I think ever since the planes, because when I first came, I came by boat too in 1951. Mm-hmm. And then, or not in 51, in 1940. In 51, then we traveled by car. And I think since the car came and then the planes, I think that's when thieving, because people could mm-hmm. get out with it. Before that, I even heard rumors, like when I was here in 1940, that somebody that wouldn't pay their bills in Alaska, and they found out that he was on the boat, they'd wire down, hey, and they'd hold you and put you back in the irons, what they call, in other words, in jail, mm-hmm. and ship you back to Alaska and let you off and say, mm-hmm. hey, as long as you owed money in Alaska, you had to stay mm-hmm. in Alaska till you paid it off. You couldn't get out. Well, now people can come up here one day and
gone the next.
Yeah, and they're gone the next, and they come in here with loads of drugs and everything mm-hmm. else and dupe up our people. And, you know, we had some fun years ago. It was a little bit drunk and thus, mm-hmm. I guess, it was going. Alaska was pretty much founded on wild women and alcohol and, you know, booze and things uh-huh. like that there.
You mentioned to me once that you didn't hunt anymore. Does that mean you've so changed your thinking about these things?
Well, I think that I've got enough of game out of my life, and then I figured, well, I'm not opposed to hunting.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I gave my guns away to my godchildren, to my nephews, you know, to people in the family. And last year I had a shooter bear, so I mm-hmm. had a gun handy. But I'm giving all that, I mean, slowly giving myself away because I can't take it with me, right?
Mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So no, I kind of look at game anymore, and I got the means that I can buy anything. In fact, I bought some reindeer meat the other day. It's a Polish sausage over at Market Basket, $3.49 a pound. Well, it was half suet. It tastes good though, but that $3.49 a pound, see. But I used to make my own sausage and everything else and same thing from caribou and from and moose and everything else.
Well, what were some of the most important things you remember? Or you felt, or you look at your life, what would you say some of the most important things were?
Coming up here, yeah, it was. I liked outdoors. I still like the outdoors. They're healthy for me, as you can see. In fact, all my friends in Pennsylvania at my age, you're gone.
Mm-hmm. How old are you, 75 now?
70.
70.
Yeah,
you sure don't look 70, Tony. You look just great.
Well, that's due to the fact that I lived outdoors and everything. And now, of course, it's getting too cold for me. My blood is thinning out. I stay indoors, so that's why I'm giving up the hunting. I'm not as active. You know, you slow down. There's no use of kidding yourself that you're at 70, you're not 17. Let's put it that way.
What sort of advice would you give to any young person coming to Alaska?
Coming to Alaska?
Not necessarily to Alaska.
It's just like now. A lot of people I talk to, they said, Tony, we wish we were here when you were here. I said, the advantages are right here now. The idea is you go to work and you save some money. And in this part of the world, you know, where I come from, if you had a butcher, it was three or four generations of butchers.
Mm-hmm.
The doctors all had the same shingle in the same house. They handed it down from grandfather to son to grandson and everything else. That's the way it was back east. Over here it isn't. Today, if your father's a politician, you can be a mortician. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same thing. They're good for the death of the community. But I mean, you still have opportunity for anybody that wants to come here if they want to toil.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll depend on how much you can accumulate. But we have, like I live in the neighborhood. I'm talking so much that my voice is getting... See, now this is a time if I was home, I'd have a nip.
Mm-hmm.
But...
I have one of your candies. Would you like one?
Yeah, maybe.
Here, I'll get it for you. We'll just go ahead and...
Yeah, so, I would say for the younger ones, they got all this opportunity of schooling and everything. They got all kinds of new fields to enter. And the way Alaska is going on this education, I don't know sometime if they're even overdoing that. Education is important, but by golly, nobody wants to use a pick and a shovel anymore. That's kind of a disgrace.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where my whole life ended up. And, that's what I ended up doing all my life, was physical work and everything else, and there was nothing wrong with that. I had an 8th grade education, but I own 2 homes here. I'm pretty well...
Oh, so you read a lot, you tell me.
Well, I got time for this year, more so now than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a phase in my life where maybe I can go back and do some of the things that I didn't do when I was too busy working. And
What would those be? What things do you think of doing now when you don't have to work?
Well, I mean reading, reading about the people of the world and philosophy. Well, I've always read, so it's a part of me, but I have more time to devote to it now.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go back deeper into some things and find out what other people had to say during their lifetimes, the autobiography of folks and what prompted them on. It isn't always, they weren't all big graduates of fancy schools. That didn't make people... some of our most intelligent people in the world were people that had to fight for it and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so now it's just going out in the summertime, like I have this place in McCarthy there. Lovely 280 acres in the middle of a park, so I'm not going to get overrun by anybody. And we have bear and moose who come by the door, a wolf on occasion.
So you figure I can tell by looking at you, you think your life has been a good life and nothing much...
Very good, very good, yeah.
Nothing much you would have changed or done differently?
Not really, no. I thought education was pretty important, but I think I gained more education just by reading and And then some people that were forced to go to school that didn't care for that. Maybe right. They were looking for the physical part of it and everything else. And yeah, I think the word for that is erudite, you know, if you self-learned, you...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, I had an argument once. After I left my first time in Alaska, then I went into the Merchant Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a special school in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I applied for that, but on this bulletin board in Sheepshead Bay, New York, it says you had to have a compulsory high school education, preferable college education. So I went and I put my name down on this thing. And I had a psychologist got me over. He says, "Didn't you know how to read English?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." And he says, "Can't you read that sign?" He says, "Your education says you got 8th grade education." I said, "Well, I think our President Lincoln was riding on the back of a shovel, wooden shovel, in front of the fireplace because he didn't have light and everything else. And we still remember the Gettysburg address." And I said, "Maybe he didn't know all the spelling of the words and everything else, but he got the thought through that lives till today." Well, he said, "Huh." He looked me over. You know, he says, "You guys like you take up our time and everything else." And, you know, I said, "Yeah, but if you're going to compare somebody that had a high school education that is dumb as an ox and somebody that can, let's do it rightfully." So, and he says, "You know, I'm going to tell you something. I'm sending 50 guys home this weekend so they can go to their families." And that was all over, like from New York, you jump to Ohio. And the Merchant Marine was taking them, well, always from Kansas. And we'll give you a week off, and then I got 50 guys coming back. And he says, "Almost every time somebody fails to show up." So he said, "Now you're not on that list of 50, but you're the first standby. In case somebody comes," and I says, "I mean, when it's 8 o'clock on a certain day, Monday, there ain't nothing, if one of them don't show up, you're the replacement." And he said, "I'm giving you a leave." So I went home to my family. I was married man already, so I had a shot. I went home to the family, and then I come back, and sure enough, somebody failed to catch a train or something that was from Kansas or Missouri, and they come in 2 hours late. And he says, "That the school, when we say that's it. So he sent me as a replacement, but he says, "You know what? Just because you've got all the guts you got and everything else, I'm going to let you go. But," he says, "I'll guarantee you, you're going to come back here." And he says, "Don't feel bad about it because we'll put you back in where you should be. But you're applying for that." Well, when I went to this cadet school, he's talking about, never mind about, I had a little battering of algebra, but when they get into all kinds of trigonometry and everything else, well, I stayed there. In fact, I was slipping a little bit there, but the instructor seen that I had put so much effort into it, they slid me back like they'd advanced these classes. So after I was about 6 weeks in there, they put me back in the class with new week, and then he said, "You got friends in them other classes, they can advise you what's coming up ahead, and you'll be with these and you'll be reviewing the things that you have, so to give you a chance." And I went through. I think I went through when I finally graduated. Good for you. I went through with an 87%.
Good for you.
So we had quite a time. So then I was a junior Marine deck officer. That was that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up in the beginning over there. Now, when I wanted something out of life, I just reached out there and grabbed it. I didn't think that the sheepskin, like they call it, or anything else makes for a better person. In fact, I can buy and sell a half of my college friends. They don't know how to write. It's like chicken tracks on a... At least I can make things legible. And then when I say something, I know what the heck I'm talking about. So, yeah, I got a nice outlook on life, I guess. But I read, I think when I was younger too, I think reading is very important. I read a set of books called The Inspirational Library. And they had which was a long time ago. And they had things like, every man a king, one can who thinks he can. That was the titles of books.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to read them, and they bolster my, my mm-hmm. mood and feeling. And I wasn't even oblivious of everything I was surrounded mm-hmm. by. I was just reading, and this was giving me the feeling. So I always had that attitude, never mm-hmm. mind about anything. If you want something, there it is in front of you. Reach for it. Might be difficult and everything else, but nothing's impossible. So with that in mind, I'm sad to say that I don't have no big ambitions now. And I think everybody should have a goal that he hasn't reached. I might say I've reached mine, so it don't matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Other than you could still be nice like I do when I go down in the summertime and I have a chance to talk with people. I'm no psychologist by any means or anything, but people love to get with somebody that has a nice attitude, a nice mm-hmm. outlook on life. And when they come for their holidays down there, why, they all seem to enjoy it, and I don't know why, but I keep winning.
Mm-hmm.
I keep winning more friends and everything else. So. So I guess, often I think, well, get into something, start building something new, do something different. But the pace is slowing down that I can hardly keep up with it now. My mind can do a lot of yard work, but when I went out there physically and then I have an old stubborn tree that got roots all over, I had all birches and spruce, and I let this one aspen, just so I could say if somebody come over the house, this is an aspen. And it grew so beautifully, it just bent out there, and then I could see the roots. When I get down in the garden, I could see these here, I could tell the roots on that aspen is they're growing down in the garden. I said, they want to take my garden over. Then pretty soon, like when I wasn't there now the last couple of summers, these aspen are growing right up through the grass, so I got aspen all over, starting from them roots. So now, I finally